Hi, everyone. Thank you for the invitation and the organization. So today I'm going to give you maybe some new insights, some dynamical perspective on the lithosphere-stratosphere transition. So this is not a new subject because we were here a few years back discussing about the structure and dynamics of the lithosphere-stratosphere system. And so there was also a recent issue in physics of the Earth and planetary interiors discussing also this issue, and the work I'm going to present has been published there. And this issue is interesting because it really shows it's a multidisciplinary effort from geodynamics, seismology, gravity, magnetotelluric data, etc. So historically, the lithosphere versus astenosphere term were defined by Barrell in 1914. And so a rigid lithosphere above a softer, less viscous astenosphere. And it's actually quite interesting that it was defined from post-glacial rebound data, so from vertical motion. And he retrieved that the rigid layer was quite thick, thicker than the crust, so it could not be the crust alone, but also the upper, the shallowest part of the mantle. Later on in the last century, this time it's about horizontal motions that we talk about plates. And this time, so horizontal dynamic plates, which are rigid blocks, are now identified to lithosphere. But plate tectonics, it's really only a surface 2D view of rigid blocks rotating at the surface of the Earth. And you don't really need to define the lithosphere-astenosphere transition to describe this motion. But it's nevertheless rigid blocks. And the lithosphere is also viewed, and actually this was done earlier than the plate tectonic theory, as the cold boundary layer of the convecting mantle. So you have both cold plate at the surface, and you also have sinking slabs into the mantle. So the lithosphere-astenosphere boundary is both at the surface, but I will maybe talk a bit about the limit in slab at the end of this talk. So to reconcile this this mechanical view and this thermal view, we have rheology. So if we consider the transition is happening in peridotitic mantle rock, this transition can be explained by the temperature dependent strength. So here you have classical strength profile. So here the brittle Bayer-Li law. And here at the bottom, you have creep laws here for olivine. And if you look at temperature dependency on creep, for young plate, you have, it's not very strong, and the boundary between lithosphere and astenosphere is quite shallow, and it deepens with age. This kind of strength profile are usually drawn for a constant strain rate values for the creep. And it's not always the ideal way of drawing stuff. I will come back to that later, discussing viscosity profile rather than strength profile. So the question is, should we consider the lithosphere-astenosphere system as a smooth transition, because it's a thermal transition, or as a boundary? So it depends on your scientific question. So the argument towards the compositional boundary has been shown below continents, at least. So here I show different types of mantle interpreted from xenoliths. So is it depleted, fertile, metasomatized, etc. And if we have a compositional difference, we talked earlier about density difference, but it can also have effect on viscosity, thermal conductivity, hence heat flow transfer and mantle flow below. But today I'm going to talk about a more simple transition, so maybe mostly for oceans. But just to say that this boundary, this compositional boundary, is also used in many studies of subduction. So either analog experiments, so here for example you have silicon potty lithosphere within a glucose syrup astenosphere. And you also have compositional numerical model where you prescribe a viscosity ratio, a viscosity contrast between lithosphere and astenosphere. So this is really a boundary. And if you want to look at the transition, you need to have thermal models. So this kind of thermomechanical numerical models, here it's just an example I showed. So today we saw with Paul's talk an example of thermo-petromechanical, where you can mix both the compositional boundary and the progressive thermal transition. And we can also, it has been looked at with analog experiments where you have the same material but undergoing a rheology transition because of water content. So here, for example, is the recent work of Andavai with Ludox. So I'm interested in a thermal transition. And this transition, so we talk a lot about temperature, about viscosity as well, but we do not often talk about the velocity transition. So here I showed an example of a stagnant lead simulation, and you see temperature variation with depth, viscosity variation with depth, and here they show the velocity variation as well. So here it's the macroscopic velocity, it's not wave velocity, it's really dynamical velocity in meter per second. So here you see the stagnant lead doesn't move and everything happens in the asthenosphere. But on the Earth, we do not have a stagnant lead. So how can we predict the vertical variation of velocity with depth in the mantle from plate to the asthenosphere? And this has also implication for the way we define the LAB. So this has already been shown by Jean-Paul. We have here the definition, so the mechanical definition and the thermal definition of the lithosphere. And so often the plates are assumed to be rigid, so very low strain rates. And so I will discuss what does very low mean. And we can use that to derive proxies for the LAB using the anisotropy. But the questions that remains is that if we want to say something about anisotropy tracking a dynamical lithosphere-asthenosphere transition, we need to say something about how does strain rate vary with depth, what is its magnitude, and does it evolve with time? So I will give a few clues about this. So we first investigate this by a simple 2D model of plate-driven flow. So here you have an upwelling near a ridge. We force the velocity on the surface. So the plate is going rightward, and here we have a forced subduction as well. So basically we have an asthenospheric flow like this. The material, it's homogeneous. We have a single material, whether it's lithospheric or asthenospheric mantle. We do not impose any discontinuity. We want to look at the transition. And so we vary the velocity on the surface. We have a steady state flow, and we look at vertical profiles through that. So here are the example of vertical profiles for different physical field, temperature, horizontal velocity, strain rate, and viscosity. And what we can see, so it's classical, we go from a high thermal gradient to a low one. We have a moving plate dragging the asthenosphere underneath. Here it's rather rigid, low strain rate, high viscosity. Then it decreases gradually because the strain rate increases gradually. And here it's constant in the asthenosphere. So we can define from this profile, for example, a thermal threshold. So well, this is an arbitrary value, why not? We can define the velocity threshold as well, taking the time where the velocity starts to be more than 0.5% different from the surface velocity. And so from this velocity, we can define a plate, so a rigid block moving, translating at a constant velocity that would be above this velocity LAB. And so you see that this velocity transition happens even without any lubricating layer. We can also define the threshold for strain rate. So here I took the arbitrary value of 10 to the minus 16 second minus 1. And we can define the viscosity also LAB, where we go below the maximum viscosity here. What we already see from this dynamical approach, if I superimpose here all the LABs, is that you see that the constant velocity plate here in blue deforms quite a lot, actually. It deforms in continuity with the asthenosphere. And you see, it does not have a very high viscosity all the time. So it deforms, and it has, the lower part has a lower viscosity than the upper part. So plates are not fully rigid. They deform at their base, even though they translate at a rather constant velocity. So in this model, at least, we saw a progressive transition from lithosphere to asthenosphere. So we saw that here it's a profile as a function of age. So you have here the deepening of the thermal structure, so the primary control on the velocity, LAB, so the thickness of the dynamical plate, it's still thermal, but it's not a precise isotherm. You see you have a strain rate, transition, velocity transition, and here I added another one, conductive to convective heat transport. It's within a certain isotherm range. What's interesting is that we can explain why there is such a velocity transition from the plate to the asthenosphere using a simple quiet flow models. And this is actually quite nice to give to students for tutorials coding as well. So we have a quiet flow, so a forced flow from above. Here you have a plate moving at U, and here you have a viscous material deforming. Here you have a no-slip condition. So if you imagine a constant viscosity, here the viscosity is constant, the velocity profile will be fully linear with a constant strain rate. Now if you go towards, for example, two layers, so here the top surface has a high velocity, the bottom layer has a low viscosity, you will see two slopes for the velocity profiles. And we can define using the continuity of viscous shear stress at the interface that the gradient here will be very low, and here the gradient will be very high. So it's inversely proportional to the viscosity ratio. So this is a simple case with two independent layers. And then if we add a transitional layer between the two, so in terms of viscosity, we still have very viscous at the top, very weak at the bottom, and here we have a smooth transition. In that case, the velocity profiles will look like this. So here it looks rather constant, and then it starts to decrease. And this defines a kind of constant velocity plate, and you see the strain rate is also increasing with depth. So this actually is quite close from what would be a more realistic rheology parametrization. So if this time we take a potential temperature for a 80 million year old plate, so the viscosity here is parametrized as a diffusion creep viscosity. So it's not a smooth transition, it's a bit more complex, but the velocity profiles look very similar to the one before. So we can explain the velocity plate. We have a transition in velocity just because we have here a transition in viscosity because of diffusion creep. What's interesting is that if we take another viscosity parametrization, so for example a larger activation volume, this time the viscosity profile, you see it decreases with depth. You have a kind of a low viscosity layer below the plate, and then it increases again. And that will affect, so this will affect the velocity plate as well. So you see here it's a bit thinner than it was before. And it will affect a lot the strain rate profile as well. So so here it's the same, but the strain rate is viewed as a linear scale. So you see that if you have that kind of viscosity profile, you have a strain rate increasing and then decreasing again, which looks a lot like the sketch here from Eaton that we had. But what's interesting is that you see that it's not at all the same magnitude of the strain rate depending on the way that you parameterize your viscosity. So even for the same thermal structure here and the same surface velocity, your viscosity variation with depth will affect a lot the magnitude and the evolution of strain rate with depth that you get. So this picture was already showed, so we can imagine a low viscosity layer maybe below the plate to calculate the strain rate. So it is partly suggested by some joint inversion of geoid and post-glacial rebound data. This also has been suggested from shear velocity and attenuation data that we could have a low viscosity layer below the plate. Maybe due to partial melt, so here that would be less than, around 0.2, 0.5% below oceanic plate at least. But this could be due to other reasons that Thorsten already mentioned this morning. So for example, it could be due to grain size variation as well, or depending on the parametrization of creep laws, you see that with a large activation volume, you can have a low viscosity layer as well. So it's possible that there is a low viscosity layer below the plate. However, the million euro question is, okay, how weak, how thick? So Thorsten mentioned this morning that maybe fitting global anisotropy gives a clue towards 10 or 100 times weaker than the surrounding mantle, but these are really open questions, and this will affect the strain rates that we get. Just to show you an example, if we parameterize so low viscosity decoupling layer, here we have so the regular diffusion creep profile, but here we impose at these depths, so above 200 kilometers, and this is a given isotherm, a low viscosity layer around 10 to the 19 Pascal second. And of course, we have here the horizontal velocity profiles. It reproduces different shapes with different slopes, sorry, with the gradient inversely proportional to the viscosity. And what's interesting is that if we look at the same velocity profiles but for different surface velocities, so 2, 5, or 10 centimeters a year, we have, well, the similar patterns, but we have different strain rate values in the asthenosphere and in the weak layer. So it means that the asthenosphere is not it's not fully decoupled from surface plate, even though you have a low viscosity layer. Okay, it remains coupled to the surface, and so difference in the strain rates can arise depending on the surface velocity, and that's quite important for anisotropy. So if I just show you like an order of magnitude calculation. So how much time do you need to develop a significant crystal preferred orientation that you would see in your anisotropic signal? So we have made the hypothesis that you need a cumulative strain of 100%. Well, this is conservative, you could say 300%. And in that case, the time you need, so it's strain over strain rate. So it depends on the value of your strain rate at depth in your asthenosphere. So if you have 10 to the minus 14, it's 3 million years. And so if you have a smaller strain rate, it's even longer. You see here the value 10 to the minus 15, second minus 1, that is often well cited as a reference strain rate for convecting mantle. You see that, okay, it still took a few tens of million years to maybe achieve a measurable CPO. But in 30 million years, a lot can happen in terms of plate velocity directions and magnitude as well. So we move toward transient asthenospheric flow simulation. So here it's a subduction simulation, so it's a free subduction. The slab sinks and then touches the bottom of the upper mantle, so it's a free slip condition, and it starts to flatten and decelerate. So we did some vertical profiles here, and I will show you later on some horizontal profiles across the slab. So the plates, subducting plate accelerates during free fall, and then it fills the bottom, and then it decelerates again, and that's just a folding, so you have an oscillation there. What happens to the velocity LAB? In that time, sorry, so I first mentioned the thermal LAB, it doesn't move much, huh? it cooled with time, so it depends a bit. The velocity LAB, so it's as the plate accelerates, you see it deepens a bit, and when the plate decelerates, it shallows and then it comes back again. For the strain rate, here you have, so the strain rate LAB at either 10 to the minus 16 or 10 to the minus 15 second minus 1. And you see that strain rate, on the contrary, the strain rate LAB shallows when the plate accelerates and then deepens again when the plate decelerates. Which means that when the plate decelerates, you go from large to smaller strain rates at the same depth for the same mantle particle. So it means that if a plate slows down, the past CPO will probably persist longer because the strain rates become too low to generate to align CPO with present-day velocity. And this has been seen in observation. So this is a paper by De Bail and Ricard, where they look at the angle between present-day absolute plate motion and phase direction of S wave. So when it's blue, it's parallel. And this is the case for fast-moving plates such as Pacific, India, Australia. And when it's red, it's complete. It's 90 degrees. It's orthogonal. So here you see for slow-moving plates, it's not blue. It's blue in some patches, but otherwise it's not very blue. So we can understand that because for slow-moving plate, we exploit small strain rate at depths in the asthenosphere that does not have time to align CPO with present-day motion, because it will take some time to align depending on the strain rate that we expect there, small strain rates. So first conclusions. So we see in our thermomechanical models a constant velocity plate that is not fully rigid. Okay, plates are moving, they are translating, they are moving blocks, but they are not fully rigid blocks. It's also interesting to note that it is quite transient. So depending on the surface velocity or on the velocity pattern below, it will evolve. And even with a low viscosity layer, the asthenosphere remains coupled to what's happening at the surface. So for in terms of using anisotropy to say something about present-day mantle flow, one should be aware that it depends at the kind of plates you're looking at, because for slow plates you expect smaller strain rate, and then you would expect that the past mantle flow is not erased by the present day strain rates. So there is a time dependency that is not often considered in models generating anisotropy that should be thought about. So what is the magnitude of the strain rate? That is a good question, but this is important for the timescale of developing anisotropy. Just to go a bit further on some different points, because the Earth is more complicated than the models I showed you. For example, here, this is a study we did with Navid Ejazian. So we can mix dislocation creep with diffusion creep composite rheology for the mantle. And in that case, you will not acquire crystal preferred orientation everywhere. You need to be in the dislocation creep regime. And in this kind of steady state flow stimulation below a plate, calculating the anisotropy with direct, we managed to reproduce a kind of age-independent radial seismic anisotropy, such as the one Jean-Paul was showing before here, without any melt content, just by changing the domain where dislocation dominates in the flow. Another complexification is that I showed you quad-dominated flow, so plate-driven flow driven from above. But sometimes you can have Poiseuille flow, so the asthenosphere goes faster than the plate. So these are velocity profile from some models as well. And you see that even for the Poiseuille flow, where the asthenosphere goes faster than the plate, you see here a kind of surface velocity plate that exists also because the viscosity transition with depths. And this has been seen, for example, in 3D models by Nicolas Coltis. So here you have a Poiseuille flow going faster, but here you have a kind of a constant velocity in the plate at the surface, even though the mantle flow pattern is quite complex. And just to finish, so I showed you some vertical profiles, so the LAB transition at the surface. But what happens, the lithosphere also goes down. It's not a sphere. It also goes down into the mantle. So we look at this by doing some horizontal profile across the sinking slab during its freefall stage so that it goes quite fast. So you see here the thermal profile across the slab. The cold slab is here. Then you have the velocity profile. So you see so slow velocity in the asthenosphere, asthenosphere dragged by the slab. Here you have, again, a kind of constant velocity slab, and then you go in the asthenosphere again. And for the strain rate, so same thing with a very low deformation in the slab, and here you just have some high strain rate in the asthenosphere because of the dislocation creep rheology. So if we put all of that together, we find that it was, as we did on the surface, we have a constant velocity slab that we can define, sinking at a constant velocity, vertical velocity, but the slab is deforming on its edge as well. So it sinks very rapidly, but it doesn't mean that it's fully rigid as well. And the velocity pattern in the asthenosphere will depend a lot, again, on rheology and on slab sinking velocity. So this opens up the question, and when we want to talk about mass transfer between upper and lower mantle through the asthenosphere dragged around slab, since we have a variety of slab morphology and a variety of slab sinking velocity, you know, you see some deform, some sink through directly. If we want to quantify the mixing between upper and lower mantle, we need to ask ourselves the questions of asthenosphere dragged by slab and of and in that case, of velocity profiles across the mantle. Thank you.